Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Kyla Hardy, CEO of Cloudbreak Discovery. Welcome back, Kyla. How are you doing?
Great. How are you guys doing? Been a while.
Been a while, hasn't it? Yeah, it's been a great weekend. Easter weekend weather's been finally actually felt like we've had some summer sun. I'm not going to ask Kev how hot he's been out there because it's probably just way too unbearable. And he's also in Ramadan, so he's probably in a bad mood anyway.
Never in a bad mood on these podcasts, mate. I always laugh.
Of course, of course.
But it's bloody hot.
That's the weather forecast, isn't it? Just every day, bloody hot.
It's bloody hot. Yeah, we're going to the Red Sea in a few days and that won't be so hot, but that'll be very nice.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be cool. Kyla, how's things with you? How's your, so it's probably been about 6 weeks since we last talked in terms of on a podcast. How's things?
Yeah, everything's going really well, you know. It's, spring has sprung in northern British Columbia for starters, which is, you know, best time of year up here. And, Cloudbreak, everything's going well. It's all going in a direction. We got a bit of financing in, did a couple of deals, and looking forward to the next 8 months, really, and finishing off a few things that have sort of been simmering in the background.
Superb. So obviously just last week you announced the intention to participate in oil and gas exploration in Namibia. What can you tell us about acquiring the petroleum exploration license in this block 1724?
Well, you know, I think... 1724 is an agreement between us, Time Warren Investments, Gondwana Investments, and a Swiss-based asset manager. And you know, we got a nice 10% stake in the deal for being their financial partner, as well as having a lot of rights around advisory on the geosciences side of stuff. And honestly, having the opportunity to participate in Namibian oil and gas is exciting. There's been some really, really interesting discoveries over the last while down there, and the government seems to be in supporting the energy industry substantially, which is great to see.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, you're striking at the right time with oil prices. You know, we saw a peak in February of around 138, 139. It's probably hovering around the mid 105, 106. It seems to be the right time going in, and obviously, as you mentioned, you've got Shell, Total, Tullow, all making significant discoveries. It seems to be like a new frontier of Namibia, does it, for oil and gas, right?
It really does. And you know what? The nice thing is Namibia historically it's been a very slow jurisdiction to get, you know, sort of implement new initiatives in that. Whereas, you know, its neighbor to Angola has been much faster and really got a lot of energy companies in, a lot of mining companies in to do stuff. Whereas Namibia, like I said, played it a little bit slower. And it's now, though, it seems to be paying off for the country. And I think they've got some pretty good mining and natural resource extraction laws coming around down there.
Yeah. So according to the RNS, you'll act as effectively a financing partner and also sit on like the joint committee for technical advice, etc. Can you tell us how advanced has there been seismic done and what sort of appraisals have been done on these projects so far on this block?
For sure. Yeah. So we are sitting as an advisor, but also the financial partner. And I just want to reiterate one thing. We're not deviating from our project generation plan. We think that this actually ties really nicely into our project generation business. It's really fundamentally early stage energy exploration, minerals, oil and gas, both natural resources. I think it fits in well. The block is overall fairly grassroots. It's in a favorable basin though, but the opportunity's there to execute on an early stage program. There has been a little bit of seismic done. There's been, you know, the prospecting component of it done. They understand. There's been appraisal wells drilled within the block, but there's a lot of work to do yet for our partners. And, but that's, you know, that's one of the opportunities why we get to participate in this is it is an earlier stage block. We didn't have to necessarily go up against the super majors for it. Sure. And, the in-country team really, you know, they're excited about it. They've put this block, they've put a second block together that we are not, sorry, not the same team, but affiliated teams that we participated in as well. And holy cow, like, I mean, we've been cracking on just and pounding the table about natural gas being a really good transitionary baseload fuel. And that's why we're participating down here. We think that there's a huge opportunity.
I was just looking at the geophysical data that mentioned in there. I think it says it indicated depth to crystalline basement to 4,000 to 7,000 meters below surface. That seems like these are quite deep target zones.
Ultimately, you know, a lot of the shallow oil and gas globally has been found. It's not, you know, it doesn't have huge pressures behind it anymore. It's sort of, they drilled it out 4,000 to 7,000 meters. Honestly, it's not that deep. It's a pretty reasonable drilling depth still. You know, in the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin, I've personally participated in drilling activities to 6,000-7,000 meters in depth, no problem. You know, pretty reasonable size rigs. It's not a huge endeavor, but you know what? It's definitely no 2,000 meter well, which is sure. Fast and, you know, very very quickly drilled. And this will be a bigger play, but we're anticipating much higher pressures at that depth.
So in place, we think in this basin that you talked about, there is proof of gas in other areas?
Through their appraisal wells, there has been gas shows. So that's why we went after it. It's got analogous formations to other basins that we've looked at throughout the country. And it's got very high prospectivity to it. It's same as... you know, us going into, let's say, the DJ Basin or the San Juan Basin and saying, okay, you know, let's drill close to where someone else drilled. Let's accumulate the data and let's have a proper look at it. And there's very high chance of success in our opinion.
Tell me a little bit more about what's been happening in Cloudbreak this year then, because really we haven't caught up that much in terms of what's been happening this year. Obviously, the share price has gone mental at times, and obviously you should be glad about that and not glad at some times as well. We've had a lot of volume. We've gone up to highs of 12, 13 pence intraday, and I think we're around the 6.5p as we speak. So tell us a little bit about that ride for yourself and also the things that have happened.
Well, it's been an exciting ride. We had a group of investors that just came into the market and just started picking shares out of the market, which was nice. They loved our business model. So they've accumulated a nice position amongst them now. You know, I think that's what really kicked off a lot of the buying. It was sort of breaking through that just sort of, you know, illiquidity of the stock. And once that happened, it got others on board. We had been doing a lot of marketing, right? So the story was getting out there. You know, outside of that, we completed a small financing, both with our partner, Crescita Capital, and Shard Capital Partners did a small financing for us, which gives us some nice runway into for the next while here to execute on some of our plans. We've partnered several projects this year, the Icefall and the Riz with Numbered Company, which sounds like it's going public here pretty quick. And you know what? As of last week, we just added a brand new director on, Paul Gurney, yep. Another Canadian transplanted to London. There seems to be a lot of us. But XBMO Institutional Sales, we think that he's going to be a great addition to our board. And really help round it out as a new non-exec for us. So, you know, we're continuing to grow the company and add in the pieces. It just, you know, it strikes me how busy we've been and how much news we have put out. And, you know, it all goes towards, you know, executing that business plan and just showing the market that, you know, here's what we're going to do. Here's what we've done. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we've done. And it just, It keeps going like that, and it's I'm pretty excited about it. It's been a wild ride, both the ups and then sort of back to you know what I would consider probably undervalued right now as far as you know, sort of our the company goes. But you know, the market's the ultimate determination.
Exactly. Not as undervalued at 1.5, 1.6, 1.7p in November, December last year, when we were shouting from the rooftops, "Guys, this is cheap!" And then all of a sudden, yes, as soon as somebody realized how cheap it was, the buy-in started to come in, and it just went to the moon, really, in terms of that. But at the same time, those highs that were reached are not unreasonable valuations for your company, I think. I mean, how many projects have we got now on the go? Now we've added two more in Namibia.
That's a total of 19 projects. That's two energy projects, big ones, and 17 mineral exploration projects. 16 of those are partnered out right now with others advancing them. You know, exposure, not including the Namibian blocks, that's over 5 million. It's almost 6 million of exploration dollars that we don't have to put into the ground this year. Northern Treasure, that's the one that we still have on our books. We're going to be doing our own airborne survey on that later on in the late spring, early summer here when the snow's gone up north there. And, you know, that's the start. We have to reload our exploration inventory now and find some more projects for partners to take on. But, you know, our lithium strategy has been advancing in the United States, and we hope to be able to talk about that sooner than later. I know we've said that before, but, you know, it just got so much bigger than we anticipated. So it's just taken longer to put together. And West Africa is coming along extremely well right now. I think, you know, between the United States and West Africa and Canada, quite frankly, we'll be able to talk about some pretty interesting new projects in the coming months here, and things that people will be able to put, you know, valuations around and really talk about how it affects the EV of Cloudbreak itself.
Yeah, so you got a market valuation now of about £28 million with 19 projects, with the lithium and the ones that you're talking about that may come in Africa. You're going to go into the well into the 20s in terms of projects, absolutely, by the looks of things. So each project effectively is worth 1.3 million, 1.4 million pounds. Plus, you've obviously got a portfolio of shares that you've achieved from all of the offtakes that you've got. And this doesn't even take into account any valuation whatsoever for royalties. Now, they're a while away before they come in. But even if we just take into account that, if we take the shares into the equation, that each project is worth £1 million. So how many of those projects of the 19 that you've currently got do you think could be worth significantly more than £1 million?
Well, you know, my natural answer is to say all of them.
I like that.
But, yeah, well, let's put it this way. Okay. There's one that's very advanced. It's going through PEA right now, and we'll be able to talk about economics on it. That's the LaBlanche project that Tamas Resources is advancing. The rest of them are quite early stage, but, you know, it's one drill program away from discovery and from a revaluation of that project with contained mineral and drill holes. A lot of the projects do have historic drill holes on them. Unfortunately, under NI 43-101, which we fall under here in Canada, and as a result, the reach of the BCSC and OSC comes over to the UK with us. We just have to be careful about how we talk about our projects and about the valuations on them. It's you know, a project's worth as much as someone's willing to pay for it early days. And once we do have a resource, and once we do have, you know, PEAs, that's then we're able to, you know, put real valuations on them that are backed up by mineral in the ground. And we hope to be there on a couple of more, if not this year, then early next year.
Sure. Can you give us an update on them? I can't remember. I think there was one probably about 4 months ago on the Imperial Heat, the helium project.
Oh, yeah.
How's things got? Because I think there was some sort of flow testing going on, or some sort of locking going on.
That's right. Yeah. So I am the chairman of Imperial Helium, or sorry, co-chairman. I've got another chairman, Brad Hayes, that works alongside me. The management team over there has drilled their third well. It's currently going through production testing and resource calculation on the field. It's gone extremely well there. They're anticipating a pretty nice resource out of it with good flow rates. And they're still guiding the market for late this year, early next year for production out of that asset, which honestly, I mean, hey, to be the first publicly traded helium company in production, that's a pretty exciting milestone to hit. So hopefully we are, we do get there. And, but you know what, the team has really been pushing on getting those wells on stream sooner rather than later.
Sounds exciting. Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing the video with the CEO or the chairman, and he couldn't contain his excitement. He was like smiling, beaming and everything. It did look really good.
That was the proactive one, I think, wasn't it?
It was
a good interview, really good interview. And, they did a great job. Both the interviewer and David did a great job on that. Yeah.
And the story there is fantastic, as you say. So, and I think Imperial Helium, remind me again, that they're actually a listed entity, right, on the market in Canada.
That's right, yeah. They're TSX Venture, and the ticker symbol is IHC. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's been trading nicely over the last couple of weeks here, so...
Started to see some volume, because last time I checked it, there was not many. You know, it seemed to just sit static at almost around its IPO price.
Yeah, it seems to be gaining some life to it now. I mean, someone seems to think something's going on. So, you know, back to the market, and you know, let's follow it, and you know, it hopefully it's right.
So, Kyla, give us the three reasons why you think now is a good time to be investing in Cloudbreak Discovery.
Well, I think you know, the number one reason is we've pulled back from our highs. We're very active right now. There's a lot of project development going on. I'd say we've found a new base between 6 and 7p. It just feels like it's ready to take another run here. So I think that's, you know, our simply our activity and the revaluation and the pullback from the highs. Two, our lithium strategy has yet to be built into the market. And, you know, that's a major, major upcoming milestone for us. And three, you know, it's the start of the exploration season here. We've got exposure to 8 or 9 companies that are going into the field for the first time in, 6-7 months to execute programs on our projects that they've optioned from us. So, right now, you know, pre-exploration season, I think is a, you know, good time to be placing your bets, if you will, for results coming out later on this year. So there's three good reasons. Fourth is, you know what, we're adding to the management team and we're growing it, and we're bringing in people that are company builders here right now.
Well, and I think we can also add that we're at the start of what I see as a commodity super cycle, and that's a great time to be getting into this space, right?
Yeah, we're in the first. You know what? I think we just finished the third inning right now. If you put it into baseball terms, personally not a baseball fan, but that seems to be the way we quantify these here. And hey, there's
not in England we don't.
No,
because we don't play the game.
The third innings was perfect. We can relate more to that.
Yeah. We talk about cricket. We've just finished. You know, we're just in a test match, and we're just about halfway through the first innings. I think maybe
we're on the first tea break on the first day of a 5-day test match, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
let's put it into a mountainous context. We're not actually even in the foothills of the Himalayas yet, I think.
Beautiful. I love it. That's one I can relate to.
Because I think we really are not even in the foothills of it. When we get to the foothills, everybody will be going, wow, this is amazing. And then we will still have a huge mountain to climb, I think, because these resources and how people have tried to mine them have been so under-resourced for the last 10 to 20 years that there's going to be huge what's the right word, huge discrepancies of how much is available, especially as demand is going through the literally through the roof like we've never seen in history, in terms of how much copper is required, how much nickel is required, how much lithium is required, how much graphite is required, et cetera. I mean,
lithium space is the place to be. I mean, you look at the price, lithium over the last year has gone from 7,800 to almost 78,000. You're like, it's 10x'd.
Isn't that crazy?
It's unbelievable.
Here's the other piece that nobody talks about, though, is nickel is the other half of a lithium battery. You know, there's only a couple of real major nickel miners globally, and nickel sulfide is extremely hard to explore for. You need a really high caliber of nickel to build these batteries, and nickel laterites currently don't cut it. And so, you know, I think nickel is going to be a really interesting spot to be outside of what was already mentioned here. And, you know, you need a particular junior to explore for that. And luckily for us, you know, our COO, Rory, he's spent his first part of his career exploring for nickel. So hopefully he comes up with a few interesting ideas for us.
Yeah. And get some graphite as well. Cause the anode is 100% graphite. I mean, that hasn't had its day in the sun yet, has it? The prices are remaining pretty, you know, level.
It really is. And, you know, again, there's only a very, very small few graphite producers globally. And it's mined artisanally in Sierra Leone, or not Sierra Leone, apologies, everybody, Sri Lanka. I had Sierra Leone in my head for something else that we were looking at. And India, there's a little bit that happens in Ontario and some in Madagascar. But, you know, globally, it's really
China, isn't it? I mean, there's not many North American companies. In fact, they're looking, the White House announced that there's a 4,000% increase in demand for it. So they're trying to look at some homegrown producers now, because there isn't any.
Yeah, they absolutely need it. So, you know,
so is there going to be
that on here?
Yeah. Is there going to be graphite underneath some of these metallurgical coal deposits?
I don't know. That's an interesting concept, though. I mean,
because basically, the more pressure that's opposed to it, the more likely it becomes graphite. No, that's the deal, I think.
Geologically, I don't know the metamorphosis that happens to create graphite, to be honest with you. I haven't really looked into it. It's hasn't been a focus of ours, but I should probably find that out if we're involved in this sector.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say about nickel, because obviously the world's problems with Russia and the Ukraine thing, a huge percentage of nickel production was either coming from Russia, Ukraine, or is going to come from Russia, Ukraine, because the biggest chances of huge nickel mines are actually in Russia. So it could throw a real spanner in the works if we don't find enough nickel.
Yeah, so, you know, it's you know what? I'll help take that mantle on, and we'll go find some nickel for everyone here. And you know what? Even like we saw this huge spike, and it was a short cover. Everybody, you know, and it just sort of messed with the market in general and all that. But you know, even around 20,000 a ton, that's huge. That's expensive nickel, and it's significantly above that right now. And it's, you know, even if it pulls back, first time I explored for nickel, it was sitting around 12,000, and people were pretty happy with it in that range. And that was 6 or 7 years ago now.
And what's the normal percentage per ton that you get for nickel? Oh, like if you achieve nickel or find nickel?
It varies so much from 0.5% to several percent. It's
okay, but why I'm saying that is it's going to be a higher percentage than copper, and yet copper's at 10,000 a ton. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it completely varies. It varies depending on your geological setting. So someplace like an Alaskan intrusion, those are quite low grade. Then you get to these nickel sulfide deposits out. Look at Voisey's Bay. That was significantly higher grade. That, you know, one of the largest junior exploration takeouts in history. around that. It's a really good story. If you guys ever get a chance to look to read a book called The Big Score, it's quite entertaining. And then, you know, you get into some of these nickel laterites, you get some really high grades, but metallurgically very complex and hard to separate out a lot of the impurities. So it can just vary so wide. And nickel deposits are in a very specific setting. So you'll find them in some place like Sudbury, or you'll find them in up in Siberia, the Norilsk stuff, Russia. And then you find that, like I say, laterites, you'll find them in decomposed rock in Philippines or Indonesia or these places, but they're not as high caliber. So it's really how the fluids have moved through the rocks and what they've left over and what they've pulled out. And but there's fewer nickel exploration targets globally than there are copper targets, for sure. Yeah.
But anyway. Overall, basically, you're buying into so many different themes within Cloudbreak that if you don't want to choose a one mine or a two miner hit, then you guys are going to be well positioned to benefit from whichever one goes off, as in whichever metal is prospering. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good play from that perspective.
Yeah, I agree, Kevin. That's a good way to put it.
Kyle Hardy, CEO of Cloudbreak Discovery, thanks very much for your time. And look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Cheers.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.